some of what Rav Amital taught us and how he shaped our lives. We're trying to thread the needle here. We don't want to be stuck in the past and just talk about the great Rosh Yeshiva, so we're all, and especially since it can make you feel very jealous. In some ways you should be, in other ways you don't have to be. We'll talk about that as the year unfolds, also how the yeshiva has changed. But let me tell you a personal story, and even if it comes at the cost of some of our discussion tonight, I hope the story will frame. I came back in 1985 from Gush, and I went to Rabbi Soloveitchik's shir. It was the highlight of my life. One of the biggest Magidei shirim in the last 300-400 years, and I get to sit in his shir. About 6 months into the shir, the music stopped. And he was too ill to continue, and he retired to Boston. And that was it. Hold off from the shir. And that was it. And I was haunted my entire life by the prospect that I missed out on one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim in hundreds of years. When I think about the Chasam Sofer, when I think about the Rambam, they're remote, they're lodged way in the past, different worlds. I want to learn their Torah, but I don't feel a sense of loss. And if I would have been 10 years older, when I think of Rabbi Soloveitchik, I feel that way. Yet, when people ask me who you're a Talmud of, I say, I'm a Talmud of Rabbi Soloveitchik and of Rav Aharon Rav Amital. And how does that stack up when I spend maybe 6 months in a shir? Because he wasn't my Rebbe in the full sense, but he was my Rebbe's Rebbe. And he lived in the same world that I live in. And that's what a gadol does that a Rebbe doesn't. I hope to inspire a lot of Talmidim and their families and their lives. I doubt I'll really inspire the next generation. Gedolim don't just have Talmidim, they have Talmidei Talmidim. Their inspiration rolls over throughout the generations. So you are to Rav Aharon and Rav Amital what I was to the Rav. How long did I sit in the shir? Not much. It was towards the end of his life, and the shirim were very infirm. But I learned so much from his Talmidim, Rav Lichtenstein, Rabbi Schechter, other Rabbanim in Waikiki. Close the door. So that's part of what I want to try to give you. What went on in these hallways a generation before you arrived? What were some of their ideas? How did they shape not just our minds and our imaginations, but Jewish thought across the globe? One of my friends, acquaintances, who used to learn yeshiva, his son is in yeshiva now. He's a major, major mashgiach. So for some reason he went to Mumbai this week to cover some ashkacha there. So he took a snapshot on his Facebook page of his hotel room in Mumbai. And it was raining outside, so he couldn't really go outside. And on the desk was my Elul preparation. There was Rav Aharon Sefer on Tshuva, overlooking the city of India. Of course, how do you begin to navigate Elul without Rav Aharon Sefer, without Rav Amital's thought? So what do Rav Amital have to say about slichos? We're getting close to slichos. Yeah, make a noise. We're getting close to slichos. I know we don't want to introduce slichos too much, too early, but I'm not going to get a chance to speak to you. That was one of Rav Amital's legendary sichot. He gave a sicha in the beginning of Elul, which was a chiddush, because when he started the Hesder program in 1968, Hesder was a chiddush. And he was trying to introduce boys who had never seen the Beis Medrash. Most of the boys in the Beis Medrash now, their parents learned in yeshiva. Or they went to a high school that was quasi-Beis Medrash, and they spent time. In 1968, Rav Amital was looking at X amount of boys who just didn't understand what Torah was, what a Beis Medrash was, what are the fears, what are the dangers, what are the challenges, what are the opportunities. So he would give a legendary opening, where we have that opening sicha there of Gigi Gay. That's a lot of legend here, a lot of asara. He gave a sicha slichos night, and I'll put on the chat list. There's actually a YouTube video, because he was an incredible Baal Tefillah. So he gave a sicha, and alumni would come in from all over the country. They still do, not as much, but just for that first night of slichos with Rav Amital sicha, 12 was Musar Seder, like 12:15 was the sicha, just times that we could start slichos at Chatzos, right after Chatzos. He spoke each day of Rosh Hashanah, spoke, of course, Ne'ilas Yom Kippur, which was just almost indescribable. I don't have the words. It's like you're literally standing by the gates of Shemayim. He brought you literally to the gates of Shemayim, and he spoke Yom HaSmur and Yom Yerushalayim. So what do you talk about during Slichos? Let's cut to the chase. We don't have that much time. Gemara and Rosh Hashanah form the centerpiece of his conversation. I'm collecting speeches over the years and collating ideas that he described. I can strongly, strongly recommend the Sefer that contains all of his Elul Sichot. It's called Eight Ratzon in Hebrew, or When God is Near, right, in English. I believe that at least the English version is available. No? The Hebrew version is not available anymore, but the English version is available. You want to buy these far before they run out, trust me, because they go really quickly. I remember my first week in yeshiva, there was a sign up in yeshiva that was a two-volume set of Shiurim Lezecher Abba Mori on sale. And I said, why would I want to buy some shiur that a guy gave for his father, his father's memory? It turned out it was Rabbi Soloveitchik's Yahrzeit shiur that he gave every Gimel Shvat for his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, that people flew in from all over the world. But miraculously, I bought a copy because I just looked at the board and who had signed up. Meir Lichtenstein, Moshe Lichtenstein. If it's good for them, it's good for me. I know what I'm signing up for. I put my name down. And the Sefer went out of print for about 25 years. It's since been reprinted. But for 25 years, I had the Rav's famous Yahrzeit shiur. Not because I knew what they were. Like, it took me time to know what they were. But so you want to get these far before you even begin to appreciate them, because one day you will appreciate them. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, source number one, Vayavar Hashem al panav vayikra. So the simple interpretation is Hashem positioned himself in front of Moshe, and then Moshe called out, Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum nechanun. But the literal grammar of this pasuk in Kitisa is Vayikra refers back to the antecedent, which is Vayavar. So Hashem stood in front of Moshe, passed in front of Moshe, and he called out, Vayikra. Amr b'yochanan, il male mikra kasav iev shal le'amro. That's the Gemara's way for saying the following statement is heretical, but it's a pasuk. And the pasuk evidently wants us to think in quasi-heretical terms. You know, Malik Hasavav, one a pasuk? I couldn't say this, but it's a pasuk. Melame, Chinesatev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kishliach Tzibor. Hashem put on a talis like a Shliach Tzibor. The Herala L'Moshe Seder Tefillin. He taught Moshe how to daven. He was, when we recite Yud Gimel Midos, we are reciting the only tefillah that Hashem spoke. All the liturgy of tefillos are human convention. David's psukim, Moshe's psukim, Daniel's psukim. The only words we'll ever say in our davening that we are repeating Hashem's words are the Yud Gimel Midos, Vayavar Hashem al panav, Vayikra, and Hashem recited and he dressed as a Shliach Tzibor. What does the Gemara intend? What is it conveying by the fact that Hashem appeared to us as a Shliach Tzibor? What are we meant to take from this? When we close our eyes and say Yud Gimel Midos, and we think about Hashem as the first Chazan, what are we meant to think? What's the image? What's the metaphor? Vamital, it's such a power of metaphor. I found it so uncanny. You looked at Rav Lichtenstein, here was a person that had, degrees upon degrees, graduate, postgraduate, and Rav Amital had a fourth grade education in a shtetl in Hungary. Yet his ability to take texts and metaphorize them and say, what the message? What am I supposed to take from it? The text may not be literal, maybe they're giving a message. What's the message? Okay, the Gemara says, Hashem was the Sa'atif v'Shliach Tzibor. Therefore, what is that? So he quoted the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, I'll paraphrase, says Hashem doesn't have any physical appearance. And any time the Torah imputes a physical appearance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's only a mashal or metaphor so we can identify with Hashem more emotionally. Really, Hashem doesn't cry. Hashem doesn't have a head. Hashem doesn't have nostrils. And the Rambam's proof is that Hashem appeared to different people in contradictory images. So if Hashem were a physical appearance, he couldn't be contradictory. And one such example the Rambam gives, source number 4, part 2, Raya Ladavar, line number 5, this is in Yisrael, that proves to you, the Rambam says, that Hashem is nothing physical. One Navi sees him this way, one Navi sees him in a different type of clothing. Now, the 5 lines from the bottom, Moshe Rabbeinu Atzmo, himself, Ra, Al Hayam Kegibor Osei Mulcham, Hashem appeared to Moshe at the Yamsef like a warrior. What's the Pasuk? Hashem Ishmil Chama, Hashem Shemo. So Moshe saw Hashem as a warrior. And yet at Har Sinai, Kishliach Tzibur Atov. The contradistinction, the inverse of a warrior, Hashem appeared to Moshe as a Shliach Tzibur based on the Gemara. The Rambam quotes this Gemara. So for the Rambam, a Shliach Tzibur is the inverse of a warrior. So what Hashem wants us to feel by invoking this metaphor, by striking this metaphor, by presenting this image, is the contrast between Hashem's awe and strength and power and transcendence, Hashem Ishmil Cham, Hashem Shemo, and the fact that he's a Bala Rachamim, and he's soft, and he's kind, and he's the inverse. A warrior can't be kind. Can't be kind on the battlefield. You have to be brutal. To be merciless. Shliach Tzibur is the antithesis of a warrior. And we're meant on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And this is a great opening to frame your entry into this period. You're meant to feel so many contradictory emotions. Because paradox in the interface between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a dead end. It's a reflection of the disparity between you and Hashem. There should be no paradox between me and you because we're more or less human beings. We're the same. So we can relate. We love each other. We hate each other. We're friends. We're not friends. We're distant. We're close. We one dimension, one variable that serves as the interface. But Hashem is so different from us. You can't find the variable, the tone, the emotion, the trait that interfaces. It's a combination of variables that all clash with one another. And when there's paradox, love, fear, might, humility, chol makom shatamotzei v'rosu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem atamotzei in v'sanuso. So, largely spoken, over the next month, try to feel the godless of Hashem. These are days of gravitas. These are days that are larger than life. These are celestial. They're broad. They're big. And the first couple of sukkim of slichos, when you enter slichos, we'll all talk about the godless Hashem, l'cha Hashem ha-gedula, v'ha-gevura, v'ha-tiferes, l'cha shamayim, af l'cha aretz, atayi saratam, gevul samta bal yavor, he's talking about Hashem building the universe, crafting the heavens, beyond the universe, beyond anything that we can capture in our minds. And then the sukkim shift into sukkim of rachamim. You take care of, you're kind to us. And that's what Hashem wants us to feel, to imagine Him. Close your eyes and imagine Him as a Shliach Tzibur. Imagine a Kadosh Baruch Hu, not just as the awe-inspiring, powerful creator of the universe, author of all human experience, of all experience, source of all reality. But how can I find a Kadosh Baruch Hu as a Bala Rachman and Bala Slichas? L'shmol arina ve'la tefillah. How can I make Him bite-sized? How can I humanize Him, but bring Him into my own world? And He cares about me, and He wants my tefillah, and He'll help me through my tzaros and my challenges and my unknown and my... That's one image of the Shliach Tzibur. The other image, we'll talk about four images of the Shliach Tzibur, is that, ironically, as strange as it sounds, you're not davening alone. I hope this year you'll feel that very powerfully, because you're in Eretz Yisrael. And the first thing that hit me when I was in Eretz Yisrael is that I'm not in some small building davening with 100 people, or 200 people, or 300 people. I'm not davening in ground zero of Jewish history, where my avos walked just a few hundred and thousand years ago. I'm looking outside at Derech HaAvos, and I'm part of a country where everyone's davening, and I'm davening for them, and there was a collectivism and a spread to my tefillot that I never felt before. I never felt it before. I was davening in Eretz Yisrael, under the Shaarei Shamayim, near Maris and Machpelah, near Kever Rachel. But it always helps to daven with other people. Because when you feel like you're davening alone, it could get very lonely, get very frustrating. Part of davening is davening with groups of people. That's why minyan is so formative if it's done the right way. Because if you just join a minyan you have nothing to do with, you don't know the people, and you're just falling into a minyan, sitting in a different place every day, you don't have that collective experience. You may be checking the boxes of Kedusha and Yehi Shmei Rabbah. But ideally, you walk into a building, you know the people there, you join them, you're standing next to them, in your place, where you stand every day, you now belong. And even if your kavana isn't great, you're part of something larger and you feel it, and you're standing together with people that you're a part of in front of the Malach Malachai Amlachim. So imagining yourself davening with others is always helpful, to not just to deepen, but to broaden. One of the great challenges of life is to go lateral, not just linear. It's always easy to be linear. It's important to be lateral. Growth in life is a combination of linear and lateral, depth and sweep, intensity and versatility. Everyone always looks for the intensity. Versatility is harder to come by. This Gemara says that basically, you know who's davening with you? Starting next week, Matzei Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is davening right alongside of you because he davened at Har Sinai. So if you're looking to feel in the company of someone else davening with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants these days to be successful just as much, if not more, as you want these days. And that's the drama of Shir HaShirim and why Chazal so readily brought Shir HaShirim into El Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. It's a duet. It's Shir HaShirim, the two songs. The song of the male, song of the female. The female, us, warning the male. The male, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, warning us. Pischili, Achosi, Rayasi, Yonasi, Tamasi. Open the door for me, Hashem begs. He has the key to every single location in this universe, except for one small place that he can't enter. And that's the human heart, because he already dislodged his authority from there and he gave you freedom of choice. You can keep Hashem out of your heart. He has no ability to get into your heart. It's strange, but it's true. You have to open your heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why the male in Shir Hashirim begs, Pischi le'achosi, rayasi, you have to open, I want to come in. You know that Hashem wants Gula more than you? You don't think the Shekhinah is crying that our children are scattered across the earth and lost from Yerushalayim? You don't think that the Shekhinah is davening on Yom Kippur alongside of you? So the first Yud Gimel Midos were authored by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that when you're davening, you don't feel alone. You're davening alongside of Hashem. You're on one side of the tunnel, he's on the other side of the tunnel, and you're trying to bridge towards one another. And that's the second reason Rav Amital taught us that we're davening alongside of Hashem. It's ironic, but very fat powerful to me, because I feel His presence so, so deeply on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I know the times in the tefillah He would cry. I know the times He would raise His voice. I know the times His voice would break. I know, like, I literally close my eyes and I feel like I'm davening right next to my Rebbe. So he may not have that consistency. I spent 30 plus years davening with him. But think about your parents. Or just think about people you never davened with. But you know they davened Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and now all of a sudden you can feel in league with them. You heard stories about your grandfather who's a great chazan, or your great-grandfather took Rosh Hashanah very seriously. I was just at a levaya the other day of a woman. Unfortunately, a tragedy. A woman passed away, originally from Chicago, and passed away. And one of their spadim was you could feel Rosh Hashanah in the home. She made everyone feel Rosh Hashanah. You walk into your home and it was a different day. How can you, one day, you're going to be responding to be parents. How can you turn Erev Rosh Hashanah, to certain do's and don'ts? It always kills me. A couple years ago, the first football game on a Sunday was scheduled to be the night of Rosh Hashanah, and it was supposed to start at 4 p.m. in New York. So all the Jews of New York raised holy whatever. They were screaming and protesting, and it got the game moved to 1 o'clock. Rabbono Shalom, you don't watch football on Erev Rosh Hashanah, whether it's at 4 o'clock or 1 o'clock. Because if you want to show up and say HaMelech and feel royalty and feel nobility and you have to prepare for it. You can't just backslide into it, shutting off the TV at 45 minutes before, taking a shower, and then expecting to walk into a different place. Your mind's still thinking about the plays. I found that so off. Let the game happen at 4 so no one will watch it. There's a tone you have to set. It doesn't have to be crying and tears and mikvah and pulling on your payas and running out and getting gartlach. But there has to be a tone, unfortunately, you have to set. So those are two ideas Rav Amital wanted us to think about the Shliach Tzibur. Number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is available to us. His rachamim is, he took himself from that high perch in Shemayim and made himself available. It's called Simsim, where Hashem is, Dir Shuas Hashem Bihim Matzo. Hashem is available. He's no longer Kela Kadosh, he's Melech HaKadosh. Kela is beyond, up in the universe. Melech is our Melech. Number two is he davens with us. I hope to get an opportunity to be more extensive, but I'm being rude to my host at the Sheva Brachos, where I have to speak also. So I'm going to leave now. Right, Bernstein will come in, and Amir Tashem will have more time throughout the year.